Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Thank you so much, Dave. We are on the precipice of a beautiful Easter weekend, and I'm not even going to play the intro music for you right now. Nice to see Daoud Saeed last night, by the way, at the Big Easy. The mastermind behind our wonderful music. I'm just going to get to our first guest's music right now. I told Kendrick Scott that I wanted to start the show with something from his Kendrick Scott Oracle Conviction CD that just dropped 2 days ago. We played this 2 days ago. It bears playing again. It's called Pendulum on Hybrid Jazz.
Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace. Where there is hatred, let us sow love. Where there is doubt, let us sow faith. Where there is despair, let us sow hope. Where there is sadness, let us sow joy. And where there is darkness, let us sow light. Divine Master, grant that we may not so much seek to be consoled, but yet to console others. Grant that we may not so much seek to be understood, but yet to understand others. Grant that we may not so much seek to be loved, but yet to love others, because it's in giving that we receive. It's in dying to ourselves that we are born again. Thank you.
And now you know why I wanted to start the show that way, right? Mm-hmm. Kendrick Scott Oracle and Pendulum from the brand new Conviction CD. I got to tell you, before I introduce the man in question here, and really, there's no question about it, okay? Lately, I have been saying, it seems, gosh, I'm old enough to be your mother. Certainly, in this case, I am with the amazing young man that I'm about to introduce to you. In a relatively short space of time, he has been able to create such buzz. It's pretty rare when somebody has been able to generate such talk because of the way he plays drums, the way his mind thinks in composition, the way he is able to lead a band and guide folks gently to create this magic that is on Conviction. I am telling you, Kendrick Scott, I'm just going to say this. I'm more excited about this CD than I can say. It reminds me of when I first heard jazz back in the 60s when I was a little girl and I felt a pop of magic. You are a magic man.
Wow, thank you so much. It's such an honor to be on your show and to be playing with the group of guys that I'm in, that I have in the band. These guys really inspire me to do great things, and it's really, I think it's a community effort on this record. Conviction is a product of that community.
And see, here's another thing about you, and it's got everything to do with the fact that you were raised in church. And you heard something, because mom and dad were both involved in music ministry. You were listening really intently, and something happened to you. And you, I introduce you, and what you do right away is you turn it around to make sure that everybody gets their props in the band. That humility is what sets you apart, too. It's what makes you, boy, I hesitate to say this, but I'm going to say it. Your greatness.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you
God.
So much. I mean, I realized from watching all of my idols that a man is only as good as the people that surround him.
Mm.
You know, so I learned from watching that, and it's so funny. And in all the great things that are happening now, I'm looking to my side, you know, with all the people in my team and saying, thank you guys so much. This is not just a reflection on me, you know, it's everybody. So I feel that that's a great opportunity for me to have right now.
Well, gosh knows that you were trained right, and it hasn't been that long ago, actually, that you were in high school. And just so folks know, I mean, not only getting a Clifford Brown Stan Getz Fellowship, but a scholarship to Berkeley. And this high school that you were attending, my gosh, what a blessing that was. The performing, the performing and visual arts?
Yes.
Okay.
High School for the Performing and Visual Arts in Houston. And
so,
it's a great place. It was one of those places where everybody was doing something and everybody had their hands in something that was being fostered, just the small little bits, you know. Beyonce was there, Robert Glasper was there, so many people were there, and
yeah.
I just got to watch everybody honing in on their craft, and that's really invaluable to be a youngster and to see those things, and also for me to see other guys that were older than me go off to New York and do great things, like Jackson Moran and Eric Harlan and Chris Davis. So that was really a valuable time.
So, Kendrick, you know what? What does one have to do to get into a high school like this? This is going to be useful information for those. You know, there's a lot of young people that listen to shows like this. So it's a beautiful thing that everybody was fostering one another's gift, and you
right.
could focus on your gift. But do you
right.
have to have an audition in order to get into the high school?
Yes. Yes, it's actually a public school,
right?
But we have an audition process that gets you in, and then they bus you in from all over the city. We had kids coming from the outskirts of Houston, out by Nassau, You know, once you do that audition and you get in, you're there. So that community is actually very wide. It's not just a zone school. And I'm not sure how Duke Ellington is there in D.C., but, you know, I'm sure that LaGuardia here in New York and Ellington, you know, they're all very competitive schools. But I think if any student is serious about his art or his or her art, excuse me, and are at the top of their game, or willing to be, they can get into those schools. And I attribute everything that's happening for me to the community because, you know, that those people at those schools, my teachers are the ones who raised me, you know, in my musical life.
Oh, yeah, and I guess it's much the same as Duke Ellington because Patti LaBelle was just here the other day raising funds for the school. So I guess that Houston does the same thing.
You know what? I'm just now thinking my drum teacher actually went to Ellington.
Oh, really?
Darryl Singleton, yeah.
Wow. It's a small world, isn't it? I mean... The more we get used to these names, I mean, I heard your name bandied about for a while now, although truth be told, gosh, it hasn't been that long ago since you debuted. I mean, The Source was out, what, 2006, 2007?
2007. It
wow.
came out. Yeah, everything has been... It's been a whirlwind, you know.
Yeah.
I've been with Terrence Blanchard for 10 years now. You know, but it flew by so fast. You know, that was directly when I got out of Berklee College of Music and I was thrust into work. And Terrence encouraged me to create that first CD. And that seemed like yesterday. And here we are today with my third. This is my second Oracle release, but it's my third CD.
It really is absolutely extraordinary, the amount of work that you've done in a pretty short space of time, but even equally, if not more so, the respect that you've garnered in those instances, and I think in large measure it certainly has to do with your God-given talent. I mean, I haven't used this word in a little bit, and I mean it. I am a spiritual person, and I get more so as I get older. But you must know this, Kendrick, there is an anointing on you.
Thank you so much. I definitely feel that. Actually, on my sticks, I write a prayer, and it says, Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace.
Mm.
So if I can become the instrument, you know, I think that in playing music, I call it sonic meditation because that's what we're doing. We're playing for a higher purpose. And I think every time I tap into that, then the music becomes, we become vessels for the music and for God to shine through us.
Oh, there is no question. And you just did a gig last night. I hear that was pretty crazy.
Yeah, New York came out. Everybody was packing the house, and the energy was great there at the Jazz Standard.
Wow. See, it's just really mind-blowing. I was more excited about you being on the show than I have been for a while. I knew about you through Terrence Blanchard for sure, but I came to know deeply what you could do in the way of with a vocalist with Gretchen Parlato. You knocked me out. You knocked me out on the Lost and Found.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that project was actually one of the easiest projects that I've ever worked on. I mean, it just working with Gretchen in particular, she's just her own person, and she's really, she lives her life with a certain conviction, and that makes it so easy. She's not trying to be anybody else. And we all came into the studio with that vibe where, you know, everything was so open and malleable that we just created something that was beautiful in that moment. And Robert Glasper, you know, he produced it, and he was just great.
Those cats that surrounded Gretchen, and this is why I get such a kick, this is why I refer back to the 60s, because when we were growing up in Philadelphia, we had a great AM radio station. So this particular station would play jazz and pop and the flavors of the day. We got a taste of really good music. So when you initially hear those kinds of sounds, Nat King Cole, Stan Getz, Sarah Vaughan, you just certain people connect and go, "Woo! I'm getting a rush. I'm not sure where this is coming from, but I know that I'm enjoying it." And that's what I feel like when I hear you and this group of musicians doing your thing. It's as if you're rebirthing jazz, etc.
Yeah, it's a funny feeling because I always feel like I'm always learning. Like I still feel like I'm that kid that's in high school learning about jazz. But it's a pleasure for me to be connected to the masters. Lenny White came out to my gig with Terrence Blanchard, and I was just in Puerto Rico with Joshua Redman, and I was hanging out with McCoy Tyner. And I feel the more and more we connect with those masters, our music is more fulfilling. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
I feel that those connections are really helping us out. And I think that along with those connections, especially in my generation right now, we totally connect with those guys, but we're also not beholden to the certain establishment of what so-called jazz is right now. So we're just embracing everything that we love, and that's like a lot of that is what I call the conviction of our whole community, you know, because we are all just, you know, just embracing the things that we love. And that's what I tried to embody on the CD. If you notice, we go in many different sonic directions.
Oh, yes.
But the overall spirit of the music is the same.
Oh, the flow on Conviction is so amazing. I just let my Amazon player just run from one track to the other so I could get a basic feel for overall what pops out at me in listening the first or second time. And it's almost seamless, Kendrick. The way tunes are put together. And, you know, it's funny that you said about the connection with the masters. The interesting thing is that you probably know this because you're so much wiser than your years. You're an old soul. But when Duke Ellington got together with John Coltrane, Duke was just as appreciative of this young cat Train coming into his midst as Train was appreciative of Duke Ellington.
Right.
So, you know, you've played with some guys that are tickled to be able to play with you because you get it. What did Terrence Blanchard say about you? You don't allow what is supposed to be into your realm of thinking. You are just creative and you allow yourself to be. Do you attribute that to the support that your mom and dad gave you early on?
I definitely attribute that. You know, my parents demanded excellence at home, but they also provided me a certain freedom, you know, to kind of discover what I wanted to discover. You know, my parents mostly were playing gospel music, and my brother's playing gospel music. But at age 14, after I had been in middle school and I was playing marching band stuff, you know, they let me go to the performing arts high school. They said, you know what, this will be good for you. You should try this out, because I wanted to go somewhere else and I was thinking about something, and that guidance that they gave me, that little nudge that said, no, let's try this, you know. They never really made some declarative statements, but I never felt that pushed to do anything. And that freedom, that little amount of freedom that I had, it made such a difference for my life. And here I am, you know, looking back, I don't regret anything.
See, that is such a magnificent thing, because you've talked to a lot of folks through the years, I'm sure. Church folks sometimes will not bend that way to let
right.
their children go in that direction, to be afforded the blessing and the opportunity of your parents saying, you know what, we're going to get you a drum kit, we're going to get you some sticks if you really like this.
Right.
Why don't you do it? So you really did have the best of both worlds happening.
Yeah, definitely. And it was just awesome. It was an awesome time to grow up. And then growing up with all of my peers around me, you know, seeing them doing the same things. And a lot of the thing about the community is our parents, you know. So our parents would all get together, and I remember my parents are Walter Smith's parents and Mark Kelly's parents. Mark is on the Fallon show right now. He plays bass on Fallon. And Walter is doing great things. He just got signed to Concord Records also.
Awesome.
And so our parents got together and they said, where are we going to send them? And then they agreed on Boston because they didn't want us to go straight to New York. So it was a great thing, you know, to be there with Walter and Mark and so many other great friends. And then we all moved to New York at pretty much the same time. And so
that's amazing.
Yeah, I always respect that community of dudes that I played with.
Gosh, you're going to remember that forever, because so many artists, as you know, don't have anything but horror stories growing up. And for parents to be so proactive and to get together with other young artists who are trying to shape their lives and say, hey, maybe New York is not a good idea at first. Because we all know you can get into a lot of trouble in New York if you are not ready for all the temptations.
Right. It was the right time. It was the right time to not be in New York, and it's the right time now to be here. But I also want to say a big thank you to Terrence Blanchard, because, you know, he really, going back to what you were saying earlier, you know, he was one of the people who taught me how to play music, not only just to play music proficiently in a way that, you know, that you could say, oh, he's a good drummer, but to come from behind the instrument. And, you know, he always talks about Art Blakey when we're around each other. And, you know, that was one thing that Art Blakey said, don't hide behind your instrument. You know, what are you really feeling about this? And I remember when I first joined his band, I had so much vocabulary and so much things going on that I was a good drummer, but I was hiding behind all of my knowledge.
Oh.
And he said, all right, it's time to put that aside and kind of just play how you feel about it. Tell me how you feel. That's, you know, and it's really a hard thing, because as a drummer, as a musician, as a person, you're beholden to so many things. You know, I can't sit down at the drums and not think about Philly Joe Jones, about Roy Haynes, about all of those guys. But at some point I had to relinquish that sometimes in order to pay homage to them, you know, because who wants to hear a drummer that sounds like Roy Haynes? You could just go hear Roy Haynes. He's still living and still with us. He's a master. So I just really attribute that mindset to Terrence, and that's really just changed my whole playing.
That's really something, and I want to get to something else that Terrence said that I thought was just great. But what you just said about coming out from behind, you know, Kendrick, it's tricky. I'm just putting myself in your place as a drummer after having seen 1967, I guess. Oh, my gosh, I was so impressionable. I saw Buddy Rich at the Newport Jazz Festival.
Wow.
And, you know, his personality was larger than life. I mean, he was he came into the room and he just blew everybody else out of the room. And I guess that could be sometimes annoying. But everybody's got a different personality. when it comes to doing what you do, which is that you are this consummate drummer, but you're also a band leader. You have to be able to do what you do in whatever personality and in whatever way you feel is comfortable. So you're saying that you feel a whole lot more comfortable in maybe a leadership capacity now, huh?
It's really funny because I've been getting this question a lot, and I really think that if you watch all the great bands in history, they have great drummers. And I always have felt that the drummer was the band leader anyway.
You know,
most band leaders wouldn't say that. But if you think about it, a drummer can make or break the band. And I feel that I'm always leading in some aspects, you know. And a part of conviction for me is surrender. So the great thing is knowing that I'm playing with great musicians, you know, why would I try to lead if I was in playing with Herbie or if I was playing with Terrence? You know, they afford you that opportunity to lead and everything. And then they do it. They lead. And that's the way I feel in my band. I feel like the guys are leaders in their own right, and they take the lead sometimes, and then I take the lead. But, you know, it's a weird experience being behind the drums, thinking of myself as a band leader, like it's my band. So, oh, maybe I should put the drums up front or something like that. But it's really not anything that I would need to do, you know. If you ask the guys, I would guess that my playing will actually shows them what's going on. You know what I mean? Sometimes I'll shout something if we're moving on and somebody's eyes are closed or something. But I try to play in such a way that shapes everything and that you can hear the direction of what we're going, where we're going. So that's the main thing about, for me, being a band leader is creating a mood, a certain sonic space, giving the band some drive, and just getting the highs and lows, the give and take, and the tension and release that any band would need, you know, in any situation.
I hear that. You really do acknowledge everyone who is in your space, and you're very aware of the different gifts. It helps that you're yoked pretty much equally to these amazing artists. And Derek Hodge, he was so invaluable in this project. Boy, you and he really do get each other, don't you?
Yes. One interesting story is that if you notice, Derek Hodge is on my first two CDs, actually. And in making this CD, I had been playing with this band that you're hearing on the CD. We've been playing a lot, spot days here and there. You know, I travel with a lot of other artists. I haven't been able to get with my band that much. And so I was thinking of doing the new CD, and I called Derek again to do the CD. And he said, you know what? I was just online, and I was watching you guys play at Smalls, and you guys sound great together. That is a moment that we should capture. So instead of him saying, okay, I'll play on the record with you, he said, let me produce the record. And, you know, I've trusted him. I trust Derek with my life. And for him to be that humble in saying that Joe is an excellent bass player, I love the way Joe sounds in your band. And that's the sound, that's the true sound of the band, to have Joe there. You know, that meant the world to me. And then he said he would produce it. He was the perfect person because he's my brother. We can talk on so many different levels about music. We can be really serious or we can be really, really funny. And he's also somebody that I respect hugely musically. So it was the perfect match for Derek. And the actual title of the CD came up in a conversation that we were having. He was talking about lately how he's been seeing a change in my playing and everything, and I've been playing with a lot of conviction, and there it was. And then the whole process started that way.
Oh, that's beautiful. Gosh, I love that title for the CD, because it just makes me smile. It really does mirror who you are now. And that goes back to the quote from Terrence Blanchard. Of course, I'm paraphrasing, but it just really hit me when I was doing research about you and for the show today. He had said to you, he was the one who encouraged you to do your initial CD, and he said, I love this, it doesn't have to reflect who you always will be. It just will be reflective of who you are right now.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. You know,
man.
Because as an artist, one thing that I've realized is that you're really hard on yourself. You have two pixies, one that says you're terrible and the other one that says you're doing all right. You're doing all right. Keep going. And, you know, Oh, yeah. So when you're making art, you know, you're just like, oh, this is a part of me. I'm going to write this down. Well, I don't know if people will like it. Let me do something else. You know, and Terrence told me, look, that was you in that moment. That was a snapshot of you. That was a picture of you.
Yeah.
And the drug in making art is that you want to show people that, no, you can make something better than that, even if they love that. You know what I mean? People are, I find that it's a blessing that the feeling of conviction has been translated with this record coming out. And now my mind goes, oh, wow, so what's the next record going to be like? What's the next statement we're going to make? You know what I mean? This is the second day it's been out, and I'm already thinking, how can I, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's the true drug of being an artist, is to create a body of work that you think touches on the vast amount of things that you love. You know what I mean? But you can't do it all in one work, which is the real hard thing for an artist, because you have so many different influences and things and you want to include them, but you can't really do that all in one snapshot. You know, you can't have a picture of yourself that shows you when you were 5 years old and 35 years old and 65 years old. It's only one, you know. So that's what I'm trying to do, create that body of work.
And this is an absolute testimony, what you just said, because what you're in essence saying, and thank God, you're bubbling over with creativity, chomping at the bit to get more involved in tapping into that. This is an amazing scenario, not only for you, Kendrick Scott, but also for us, because instrumental music, period, needs to have that kind of input. We are at this precipice now of genre bending, and this is why I call my show Hybrid Jazz, because it's cool to have these straight-ahead moments. I love straight-ahead jazz. I love some of the contemporary music, but I love it when you, here comes you, and you decide, you know what? I hear it differently.
Right.
Let's do a little of this, a little of that, because that's what I'm feeling. And if I don't feel it, it's not going to get done.
Right. And the thing that, one of the things that I saw a little while ago, it said creation is the most, what is it? Creation is the most flattering. Oh, shoot. I can't even remember what it goes.
Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery? Something like that?
Yes, but creation is the most honest form of criticism.
Oh!
It's the most honest form. So when you think about it, anything that you do in your life, I was thinking about making up my bed, right? So my mom loves to have, like, 20 pillows on the bed. And so... When she comes to my house, I only have 2 pillows on my bed. And, you know, that to me is a part of, you know, this taking things that you love, taking things from Roy Haynes, taking things from Jimmy Cobb and Philly Joe Jones, the stuff that I love, taking that. And the other stuff that I'm just like, well, you know what, that's cool, but that's not me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the authentic part. You know, where the creation is, You know, that's what I was trying to say before. I couldn't remember what I was saying.
I get it. And you are so traveling in the right circles, because it seems like there's the new standard 101, and you are part of this class that is changing the flavor of the rules, and the rules needed to get changed, because you know, people have been moaning about the state of jazz or instrumental music in particular, or in general, I should say. And you know, here is this amalgam of this creativity. Derek Hodge has been working with you. You're a brother to Derek Hodge. Derek Hodge has been working with Robert Glasper. Robert Glasper knows Gretchen. You know Gretchen. Taylor's in that this wonderful project that you have, Conviction. You've got Joe working with you, who is just amazing, and I can feel his passion pop. It's just really refreshing. God bless you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
You are welcome. Can we please play a track? And you know what, Kendrick?
Yes.
I love Too Much.
Okay. All right. I'm very happy you do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You want to set that up?
Sure. This is a track by the writer and indie pop guy Sufjan Stevens. He has a very quirky sense of composition, and
yeah.
I love how he fuses pop with that quirkiness, and this is what we did with it.
And this is, I mean, it's such a cool vocal. I love Alan. He's
right.
Man.
Alan Hampton on vocals.
And you'll have to tell me about how you and Alan came to be, but let's give folks a chance to listen to this. This is from Kendrick Scott Oracle, brand new as of 2 days ago, Conviction. Too Much on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
If I was a different man, if I had blood in my eyes, I could already your heart, I could already your mind. Now I'm lonely instead, I pick up a fight. So pick up your battering ram, if I want to see it. There's too much riding on that. There's too much love. There's too much riding on that. Too much riding on that. There's too much love. There's too much riding on that anyway. Maybe I talk too fast. Maybe I talk too much. Give me the sensitive life. Don't give me the sensitive touch. Even if I could have a kiss, even if I could. I'm so sorry, I tried love. Too much riding on that. It's too much love. Too much riding on that. It's too much love. Too much riding.
Honestly, there is such depth and vision to Conviction, Kendrick Scott Oracle, and too much. Kendrick Scott, you really do enjoy playing those drums, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I feel that peace when I'm doing that.
Oh!
Definitely.
You just, it's not, you make it look easy, you make it sound a little bit easy because it's so fluid when I hear you, but these are tricky scenarios and beats that a lot of folks are, you're getting such buzz that people are going, how the heck? He is just so different. He is so involved in this music and listens so carefully to the people around you. Do you get up in the morning and first thing you do before getting a beverage is go to your drums?
Well, yeah, I've done that a lot. Recently, that's been harder because I've been on the road. But, yeah, I remember when I first moved to New York, I mean, my bed was right next to the drums, and I rolled out of bed. You know, my roommates wouldn't really like that, but, you know, it's one of those things. The funny thing is I'm always practicing in my mind. I read an interview about a musician that was on a plane with John Coltrane, and they said his fingers were moving the whole time he was on the plane. and he was practicing in his mind. And that's the way I am. You know,
wow.
It's always turning. It's always turning. That can get on your nerves if you're sitting next to me all day. But, you know, that's one of the things that keeps me going, you know.
And how excited are you about being on Concord? That's a pretty cool relationship, isn't it?
Yeah, the relationship with Concord has been amazing. I'm so happy that they, you know, saw fit to partner with my label, World Culture Music, and to put out this music. You know, so many great artists are on that label, and I'm
yes.
so happy to be a part of it.
Yeah, I mean, lately, it just seems that my little coalition of folks who tell me what's going on, DL Media, based in Philly,
sure.
my hometown, I get these emails all the time from different folks on Concord, and I went, whoa, it sounds like Concord's becoming the new Blue Note.
Yeah, Concord has a great new young crop and of musicians, and you can all hear them on the next collective record entitled Cover Art on Concord also. And all those guys are my peers, you know. Actually, Jamar Williams, the drummer in that band, also went to our high school, and so did Walter Smith. So there's a lot of really different things coming out of that collective, you know. And each of them individually have their own bands, and they're doing their own thing. So I always give a lot of respect to those guys, even, you know, as we are definitely young peers, you know. They are definitely growing every moment, and I think that's what we're here to do.
So, you know, this is important to ask because there will be ears. There are a number of artists in different kinds of genres who listen to this show, and we talk about this all the time, independents versus those who are signed to a label. Do you think that Concord represents a new era in a label in that apparently you have been given your own blueprint for what you want to do on your own recordings? Is that what the high is about being on Concord?
Yeah, that's truly a high. And
yeah.
I feel that it's going to be a lot about partnership. Because the way this record was created is I actually created a record from my own record label. And then Concord actually partnered with me to put it out.
I love
it. And I think that's one of the most perfect partnerships.
Yes.
Where the artist gets control of their work, and then they get the benefits of having a great label like Concord, you know, to put their work out and to support them. And it feeds back into each other, which is what I love about the whole way we put it together. And, you know, it's a blessing to be on Concord. You know, the climate has changed so much, you know, that, you know, I've done it the other way. And I've done it independently. And for me personally, that got to be a lot of work. And I felt it was taking away from my music. And so when I got a chance to, you know, work with Concord, I couldn't turn that down.
Oh yeah, that's a beautiful situation. Oh my gosh! But let us clarify to those who are listening that Concord was acutely interested in Kendrick Scott, not only because of his obvious talent and his business skills, which have not gone unnoticed, but when you're a young, extraordinarily playing guy who is on the scene creating this kind of street talk, and you have played with the Jazz Crusaders, and Diane Reeves, and Pat Metheny, and Joe Lovano, and Herbie, and Terrence, who don't need last names, you're going to get a second look from a label who does want to partner with you. So, whew, there but for the grace of God go you, Kendrick Scott.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
You are so welcome. What would you like to see as icing on the cake now, because you are living this beautifully charmed life? What would you like to see as the next step for you?
next step for me, hopefully every day, will just be to keep learning. Keep learning, keep growing, keep creating a body of work that I can be happy about, and keep learning from the masters.
That's a beautiful thing, and I appreciate you saying that, because it takes a pretty secure person to know that the balance is everything, to take what is essential from the masters that resonates with you, and then to put your own spin on your music so that you are fully aware of others appreciating you down the road. Because truth be told, Kendrick, there will be young people listening to you now and young people in the future who will consider you one of the masters.
Oh, wow. That makes me feel weird and good and weird. But I actually wrote I did a drum piece on my second album, and I as an homage to Max Roach, and it's called Know You, Know Me. Know You, Know Me. So, you know, for all of the masters that I love, you know, for them, if without them, I wouldn't be here. So, that's the way.
Well,
I feel
about it. Yeah. See, this is why you are wise to know this. People have paved the way, and sometimes with blood, sweat, and tears. Today is the memory of the birthday of Thad Jones. And he went through a great deal in his life and finally had to flee this country to live in Copenhagen. And, you know, people seem to forget that, especially if you are an African-American involved in jazz, in selling out venues, that was fabulous. And people realize that when they study their history with absolute wonder. But meanwhile, you couldn't stay at the hotel where you sold out the venue.
Right, right.
So to remember these beautiful, creative wonders who toiled in the field so that we could all enjoy the fruit of their labor, it can't be stated enough.
Yes, you're very right. You're very right. I realize that times have definitely changed, and our music has come out of such I can't even say with words what the music has really come from, but I'm blessed to be able to be a part of that lineage, and to be playing this music every time I sit down at the drums.
And I know that you feel that way. I definitely feel it. You there's a difference with you, because, and there always is, once you have been raised in church, you always go back to church in whatever it is that you play. So it's really cool to know that I feel that spiritual connection, and I feel the blues, because jazz is rooted in blues. And then there's these other elements that come in. Conviction, just, man, it's just a beautiful, it's like an otherworldly experience. I can't say enough about the album. And I don't want to embarrass you, but it's just something that you have to have. And that's for anybody of any age or any background, because this is the future of jazz.
Wow. Thank you so much for saying that. I really take that to heart, and it makes me very inspired to make more art, and that's what I love to do.
I know you do. Bless your heart. And thank you for spending so much time. I didn't think I was going to get this much time out of you today, but that hour flew by.
Yeah, it did. It did.
That's awesome. So I'm going to leave with a third track. One of those songs that hit me initially was Apollo.
Apollo, yeah. That's a good one. That's written by my friend Walter Smith.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's there's some kind of joy happening in this track. Can't describe it.
Definitely. Definitely. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Kendrick, I didn't really think that you were going to have time, and I appreciate you. We'll savor this interview because, gosh knows, in the weeks and months to come, you're going to be busy. Oh, look, you're going to be in Washington, D.C. in the next couple of days. We didn't mention that.
Yes. I'll be there playing at Bohemian Caverns on Friday and Saturday, which is the 29th and the 30th, I believe.
Guess what? That's tomorrow and Saturday.
Tomorrow, yeah.
Tomorrow.
All the days are running together now.
I know. Well, look, if everything works out, I'll see you on either one of these days. I can't stay away from seeing what you are like live. So expect to see this crazy blonde in the audience.
All right. Thanks,
okay.
Trish. I really appreciate it.
Kendrick, I appreciate you. God bless you and everything you do. Thank you for your music. I really mean that.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
We'll see you. Bye-bye. Kendrick Scott, oh, my gosh. Didn't know we were going to have this great time together. I'm so tickled. Let us please play a third track from Conviction, Kendrick Scott Oracle. What a band. They tore it up at the Jazz Standard last night. Seriously, you should see his Facebook page. Yeah, there's a few videos floating around. This is Apollo on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Enjoy. Now, man, and I'm in the kitchen of my house, and nothing's on the stove, so it's not creating any heat there. Nancy Wilson, Love Won't Let Me Wait. This is the beauty of having extra songs on my programming sheet here. Here's why. So excited was I about Kendrick Scott coming in first, and then Todd Marcus coming in at the 3 o'clock hour of the show today, because these two are just the absolute end all and be all of what is happening in the way of the takeover of jazz. Seriously, I was so excited that I thought that I had recorded another song and scheduled it into the mix, and I didn't. So I had to go to another vocal, and thankfully Nancy was here. Love Won't Let Me Wait from Love, Nancy, 1994. And you have to hear this in case you haven't heard this. On the Facebook page, on my front page, there's a whole lot of likes. But in the box on my page of likes is a little petition, as it were, to get to the ears of someone at the Kennedy Center who can make this decision, because truly, Kennedy Center honors are long overdue for Nancy Wilson, for real. So if you are of a mind to do the like thing to that page that you see and see if we can get some folks to snap to attention, because Nancy just turned 76 in February. she looks absolutely beautiful. I saw a recent picture of her. She took my breath away. That's how incredible she looks. She needs to have this kind of accolade before she goes to that great jazz heaven in the sky. We need to give people flowers while they live. Don't you agree? I thought you would. So, there's Nancy Wilson, one of those unexpected delights. Oh, nothing like hearing an earthy song like that right before Easter, right? Yeah! Oh, mercy. But that's okay. The track we had in mind will wait until next Tuesday. And by the way, just so you know ahead of time, next Thursday will be April 4th. There will be no show next Thursday because it will be my son's 21st birthday. Yes. He is still in Florida, still with Dad. They are in Fort Lauderdale now, and they'll be making their way back Friday, tomorrow. I am going crazy. I've never been this much away from my son. There's been no distance like this for a long time. Oh, so besides Rufus and Chaka Khan, our babies, our cats are going crazy. So is Mom. Anyway, enough of that. And we're still working out the details of a pretty special show on Tuesday. So keep that in mind. Thad Jones, that was in the second song in the mix. And Rhonda Robinson, we're sorry that you cried over that song, but that's a good thing. Thad Jones and actually Mel Lewis and their orchestra that they formed in 1965, A Child Is Born, the best-known song from Thad Jones, although there is so much to say about him, it's just crazy. 1970, the year for Consummation, the name of the CD. I play Thad Jones today because today marks his birthday. On March 28th, 1923, he was born. He passed away in 1986 in Copenhagen. And there is much that we could say about this self-taught genius. In a musical family, Pontiac, Michigan, Hank and Elvin were his brothers. You know those names, I'm sure. Became a member of the Count Basie Orchestra in 1954. So whenever you hear those beautiful chestnuts, April in Paris, Shiny Stockings, Thad Jones was a part of that coalition of the orchestra. He was an amazing arranger, sometimes uncredited on some of this work by Count Basie, and that's a shame. He was so good at what he did that when he was with Mel Lewis, I don't know what possessed him to do this, but the band did not know that he was going to move to Denmark. And he was in Denmark for a while. He came back to take over the Count Basie Orchestra, but he decided to go back to Denmark, and that's where he passed. Just amazing scenarios in his life. A Grammy Award winner, one of those beautiful souls, but a perfectionist. A little bit tough to keep up with Thad Jones in what he was able to do on his instrument, and the band had to follow closely. He pretty much had to get his notes together because one false note and things sounded awry in any orchestration that he did. But knowing that turned out some of the most beautiful work. And A Child Is Born usually is played around Christmas time, but it was Thad's birthday today, and it's Easter, and it just seemed to go hand in hand with Apollo that we played at the start with Kendrick Scott Oracle. Amazing. Let us tell you who was on Conviction, Kendrick's brand new CD that dropped 2 days ago. John Ellis on tenor sax and bass clarinet. Bass clarinet, by the way, will figure prominently next hour because that is what Todd Marcus plays, and like no one else. Mike Marino on guitar, and Mike was with Kendrick when they launched Kendrick's debut back in 2006. So there's been quite an association there. Also, Taylor Eichstein on piano, and Joe Sanders on bass, and Derek Hodge, who did so much wonderful work on production. It was just not even funny. Kendrick on the drums, I can't say enough. The arrangement, the band leading he is able to do, breathtaking. Alan Hampson also on vocals, a couple of tracks on Conviction. Just mind-boggling. Whew, did I say Joe Sanders on bass? Yes, I have to say him again. He's so cute. All right, now we're going to get to a few more tracks before Todd Marcus comes our way at the top of next hour. And speaking of trumpet, we're going to have a few more trumpets coming your way. There is another birthday that will be celebrated in the next couple of days, and this gentleman will be 78 years old. For those of us who remember him from the 60s and then the 70s and what he was able to do with these many years of making magic in the music, you'll remember from the first notes that you hear who this man is. I'm going to play one of those guys that took a page from a master and play Chris Botti for you right now. Had to play this song. This is not the Easter Parade that you might remember, the classic. This is a different Easter Parade. It's actually taken from the pages of a alternative group called Blue Nile that was out in, 1984 or so? This is Chris Botti from his 2001 Night Session CD, Easter Parade, on Hybrid Jazz. Thank you. This is Hybrid Jazz.
Thank you. of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and for you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day and the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the face of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying how do you do. They're really saying I love you. I hear babies crying, I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. And I think to myself, what a wonderful.
A lot of people, when A Time for Love by Jeffrey Osborne first came out not that long ago, you have to take a second thought and say, wow, this is going to be an album full of songs that have been done with absolute love and with great sales volume by other people. It takes a really special human being to think that he can tackle those songs and know where his head and his heart are coming from as far as those songs are concerned. So I was so pleasantly surprised to see that critics really did appreciate this album. Jeffrey has taken songs that we have known and loved, Shadow of Your Smile, My One and Only Love, Teach Me Tonight, Nature Boy, When I Fall in Love, you get where I'm going. But this song, whoa, this song has a special meaning all of its own. What a Wonderful World, because Louis Armstrong was beloved all over this planet. Not only this planet, but maybe on other planets too. So to actually do a song that was so associated with someone else, that's brave. But I love Jeffrey's version of this song, you could just tell that his heart was full of love when he did this. And it does not hurt that you got George Duke on piano. Okay. George on legonks and piano, and of course George produced the album. Christian McBride on upright bass, John Roberts on drums, Paul Jackson Jr. on electric guitar. You know, this is what George wrote in the liner notes. He said, "Another song that I thought, what the heck am I supposed to do? All I could think about was Satchmo. Coincidentally, I was music director of an International Jazz Day concert at the UN around that time, and Herbie Hancock, who put it together, said, I want someone to do Wonderful World in the show. So I called Esperanza Spalding and said, do whatever you want, and she took it so far outside of what it started out that it cleared my mind. I sat down and started playing these chords and came up with an idea for a groove, and called Jeffrey to see if he liked it, and he loved it. And that was that. The whole album is full of this special kind of surprise and wonder for each of these songs. Just so beautiful. Please go out and get Jeffrey Osborne, A Time for Love. You're going to love it, honestly. Great Easter or Passover present for somebody, by the way. Just saying, you know. Yeah. Anyway, I told the gals, and we not only have Griselda here today, we have Beach and Linda on her break from studying law. Linda! She brought white chocolate croissants over to Beach. The Malibu ladies, my brides of Funkenstein, are hammering out today. And I see that Peter has joined us. And E has joined us as well, so it's really cool friends in the house. Bobby Womack joined Jeffrey Osborne over the weekend at Horseshoe Casino in Indiana. Now, I'm really glad to see Bobby Womack because he has had health issue after health issue. I'm just tickled he has one more day with us. But he was standing next to Jeffrey, and I didn't know that Jeffrey looked this good. He just turned 65 a couple of weeks ago, and his torso is tight, and his arms are massive. He's looking good. Oh, my God. So it's a good thing that I did not imagine that visual when I was talking to him when he was on the show a couple of weeks ago. Oh, gosh. Phew. It would have really been a distraction. Anyway. Let us tell you about Herb Alpert, shall we? Herb Alpert, Rise, from 1979. Yeah, it's amazing. Just telling the wonderful folks in the chat room how much, and they already know this because Rise is one of those songs that is a favorite song for so many. Herb is absolutely a genius. We certainly know him as a trumpeter, who has had massive success, but a record label owner, he's a philanthropist, so his work in that regard in giving back his Herb Alpert Foundation is just amazing. We could spend a whole show on that. But Herb is one of these guys who started out early. Self-taught, really. He started out early playing in clubs, and here's how it started, in case you have never heard this story. Crazy. He had a little studio above his garage apartment. He was tinkering around on different sounds, and he happened to take a trip to Mexico, and what he was inspired by fueled him so much that he thought it would be cool if he could get some crowd sounds and get the flavor of what he heard at this bullfight and amassed a fortune. It was just him in the studio. He put together essentially the Lonely Bull sound from the 60s. We're going back 1962, right? So disc jockeys heard it. He did the thing that you did those days and took his tape to the local places. Beach just informed me, and I already knew he went to Fairfax High School in Southern California, and disc jockeys loved it. And the outcry was such, because he said it was Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. There was no Tijuana Brass. So he had to put together a band and call it the Tijuana Brass out of need. Folks were saying, we want you to play Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. We're going to book you. So he had to quickly put a band together. It's crazy. And then you might not know this, but he was the only person that I know of that was number one on the Billboard Top 100 in both instrumental capacity and vocal capacity. Rise was number one on the Top 100. He was also number one in 1968. You know, This Guy's in Love with You. Oh, some folks remember that song. Number one. And just found this out in the past 24 hours. Uncredited. He's in The Ten Commandments, the movie with Charlton Heston. He is the drummer, in quotes, the drummer on Mount Sinai. So in case you see over Easter weekend The Ten Commandments, be looking for Herb Alpert. That's crazy, but it's true. And I'm just so tickled that he and Lonnie are doing so well. In 3 days, Herb is going to turn 78 years old. Yeah. And didn't know this. How about this for serendipity? Didn't know this actually until this day. Herb had a song that he wrote with Lou Adler, who was a different story entirely, big producer in Hollywood back then. They got together with Sam Cooke, and they wrote Wonderful World. If you remember that big song for Sam Cooke, Wonderful World, not to be confused with What a Wonderful World that you just heard Jeffrey Osborne do. Crazy! And Chris Botti, yes, oh, Easter Parade, originally done by the group Blue Nile, 1984 on their debut. Chris did it again. Abe Laboriel on drums, Abe Laboriel Jr. on drums, excuse me, Billy Childs and Jeff Lorber on this album, Night Sessions, the fourth studio album from Chris Botti that he did when he and the guys were holed up in this house in the Hollywood Hills. They would only do songs after the sun went down, and that's why it's called Night Sessions. Easter Parade is what we heard. And in case you can do this, it might be sold out, I'm not sure. Earl Clue's Weekend of Jazz coming up next weekend. Chris will be part of that. Yay! And look, I did it again. I thought that I had put something into the mix, and I did not. So what we're going to do is, I was so excited about the show today. We are going to play a song here that is, did I do this? Did I even do this? I'm not sure I did. Ah, that is just crazy. I didn't. Look, I'm not usually like this. Usually I'm very organized. But I guess I was just supposed to play Todd Marcus. And that's fine with me, everybody. Yeah. So those songs will have to wait until Tuesday. You should know, though, that Michael Brecker, the late, great Michael Brecker, his birthday is tomorrow. He passed away in 2007. And I had a Michael Brecker tune all set to go. And we had Sarah Vaughan's birthday yesterday. Yeah. So we remember Sassy. We got to do it. We got to play something by Todd Marcus that's one of the lengthier tunes. We are so proud of Todd Marcus in Baltimore. He has done not only great work in music, but of equal importance to him is his work in the community, because he thinks that in order to be a greater artist, you have to be hands-on in making your community better. I love him for that. This is going to be our second time to interview. I want you to hear how breathtaking his work is. This is something from the amazingly received Inheritance album, Todd Marcus exploring more and more of his Egyptian roots. This is something that is so serene. It's 9 minutes worth of magic. It's called Solstice on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Enjoy. Thank you. Isn't that the absolute perfect way to usher in a special weekend? This is Holy Thursday, and I feel it. Tomorrow is Good Friday. Next couple of days, Easter. Gosh, folks are celebrating Passover. I've got a little of both happening in my blood. God bless you, my great-grandmother, Ava Shainstein of the Ashkenazi tribe. It's just really weird to go back and feel different childhood memories from listening to a CD, which is what happened when I was listening to Todd Marcus and his amazing team of artists on Inheritance. What you just heard was Solstice and 9 minutes and 15 seconds. Woo! Just breathtaking music from one of these artists in our region who is so respected, and not just for one reason, although it would have been enough to point out to you that there are very few people in the world who fixate exclusively on the bass clarinet. And when you hear it done so fluidly like that, how can anybody make the bass clarinet appear to be easy? There's just a way that Todd Marcus has of playing that has made everyone sit up and take notice for a number of years now. But it's not only that, it's what he has been able to do in the community. And we're going to be talking to Todd, actually, about both. As a matter of fact, right now, the composer, the band leader, oh, what a band leader he is, the community activist who has been so since college years, and one of the premier people in the world on bass clarinet. This is our second interview. Welcome, please, Todd Marcus. Yay!
Hi, Trish. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you. I see your friends are lining up in the chat room. I love it.
That's good to hear.
It's good to hear you. My goodness, you have received a ton of accolades for Inheritance. Are you buzzed?
I'll tell you something. I'm excited about it. And a big part of that is because I feel that with this recording, it's gotten my work out to a broader audience. And it was what I had hoped, that I'm based in the Baltimore, D.C. area. And for a long time, I've kind of felt a little isolated here. And some of that is because I play this unusual instrument, and most of what I do is as a band leader. There's not a lot of sideman calls for my instrument. So it's kind of all that what I have to do on my own. And so The hope was that with this album that it would get more of that out there to folks on a national and international level. And so the reward is seeing some of that stuff taking place and getting the good reception of the album, getting more folks wanting to do work together. So on a lot of levels, it's been good. In addition, just to feeling happy with how the music came out.
Yeah, and you know, considering your background, and the first time that we were together, I could actually see you because you were in the glass studio across from me at the old radio station.
Yeah.
But now in hearing you, I would imagine, Todd, that because you are from northern New Jersey, and I can hear New Jersey now in your voice, you probably, in coming to Baltimore, it's a different kind of scenario. I mean, you initially came because you were going to Loyola, and you stayed.
Yeah.
But what you do, since there are standard operating procedures, it seems, in Baltimore. There are certain instruments that you play, and I guess you have been looked at as if you have grown a third head when you have said to people, oh, I play bass clarinet.
Yeah, it's definitely, third head, odd kind of choice. And so I tell you, it's something that, especially in the earlier years, it was something that I was aware that I was kind of laboring out there on the fringes. And so it was tough. It was pretty tough. The instrument itself does not really, in a lot of ways, lend to the way that I'm using it is a quieter orchestral horn. So trying to get it like you hear with a lot of that power and the energy, it was a tricky thing. Technically, it's very difficult. But once I started making some more progress and I think getting the way that you hear in my work coming across now, the nice thing is that even if I'm out and about, and there could be a ton of great tenor saxophone players in the room, and there we have a lot of great saxophone players out there.
Oh, yeah.
I'm now at the point where this odd quality of it, that third head kind of quality, I think is now starting to work a little more in my favor.
Oh,
because, cause like you said, it's something that, there's not many people worldwide that are doing what I'm trying to do with this instrument. And so now it's been, I think, something special and an asset to what makes my work unique and distinct in a day and age when we got a lot of talented people out there. And it's nice to have something that's new, fresh territory that I've been able to cultivate a little bit.
And what makes it so fascinating, and the timing just seems to be so right for this, gosh, not only for this show, because honestly, Tada, I was drifting back in time. I was hearing some ancient sounds when I was listening to Inheritance.
Mm-hmm.
This is Easter week, so
you
know what? I mean, it's the perfect time to hear. We were never told when I was growing up that I had some Israeli blood in my family. So, you know, nobody else in my Catholic school was eating matzahs or a hamantash. So, you know, I was like this oddball person who went, oh, we had some hamantash last night. What?
Mm-hmm.
So we would be listening to different music in the house, and it just all of these memories came back. And here's why it is so interesting about you. Here is you. When I first met you, you look like the guy next door. You look like you...
like the bass clarinetist next door.
Right. You are this guy who essentially is blonde and blue-eyed. And then you're the last album certainly showcased that to a degree, but you've been hungering for more of your lineage, which is Egyptian.
Yes.
So here is you playing this bass clarinet with absolute authenticity. And it just is mind-blowing to see you play.
Thank you.
Oh, Todd, thank you. It's like you're seeing somebody that was supposed to have lived like 100 years ago. Crazy.
Well, I tell you, you're right. The reaching into my heritage is definitely something I've been doing over the last several years. So really since, like you pointed out, since we had met and then when we had done the interview at the studio a few years ago, since that time, a lot of my work has taken place where I'm trying to incorporate Middle Eastern music and Middle Eastern influences into my jazz work. And that's because my dad is Egyptian. Now, the reason that you don't see it when you look at me initially is because my mom is from Pennsylvania. And I have a younger brother, and it's interesting. I think I got more of my mother's features. My brother, who's got much of a darker complexion, the very dark hair, he's got more of my dad's complexion and features. But, yeah, my dad is Egyptian, and I still have a lot of family there in Egypt, in Cairo. In
Beautiful.
Alexandria, my dad grew up in a small little farming town called Minya. He was the eldest son, and his dad was unfortunately out of the picture, so he, from a very early age, was supporting the family, working from the age 16, teaching in Sudan, sending money home. And so, you know, as is often the case, since he had then immigrated in his 20s to the United States, met my mother, and we grew up in New Jersey, wasn't much of a Middle Eastern or Egyptian community around. Didn't have Arabic being spoken at home. And so, unfortunately, I didn't come up with those things. But it's often the case we start getting older, get a little more reflective, a little more interested in some of our heritage and background.
Yeah.
And while I've had the chance to go back to Egypt and visit family a bunch of times, The recent few years have really been me trying to look into some more of the cultural aspects. And for me as a musician, obviously there was the relevance of exploring Middle Eastern music and then trying to take that and bring that into my jazz work. And then, like you said, that's what you're hearing a lot of on this new album and just my work in general in recent years.
Just so fascinating. And there's a bazillion questions I want to ask, and maybe the first one starts with this. Do you think it was not only a matter of you becoming older that you became so passionate about exploring the possibilities of blending what you already loved, jazz, and incorporating the sound of your lineage? Do you think that part of that desire was fueled by the fact that in college you made a special connection with a man of God who was instrumental in turning you on to what was going on in the African-American community, and that has become another past year since?
That's interesting. I appreciate you studying about some of my things to know to ask me that kind of interesting question. You're absolutely right. I mean, when I was in college, I came to Baltimore. I was studying political science, and it was on my Saturdays that I was volunteering in what would become my neighborhood, and is now my neighborhood for the past almost 20 years now, African American neighborhood over in west side of Baltimore on Pennsylvania Avenue called Sandtown. And so for me, I was getting interested in jazz and meeting a lot of people in the community here and studying a lot of stuff about people that were musicians that I was looking up to, Coltrane, Miles Davis, and a lot of the American history at that time, 50s, 60s in America, the civil rights era in our history. And so all those things for me really collided, feeling passionately about that history, feeling passionately about ongoing need for racial reconciliation in our country. I feel very strongly that we're yet in a time period where we have not as a nation confronted the ongoing racial challenges and ongoing racism that we face. And so for me, being a part of this community permanently was a way to further those relationships, to be engaged on a daily basis in some of the good work we have going on here in our neighborhood. You mentioned Elder Harris, Elder C.W. Harris, the founder of our community nonprofit, who's a lifelong resident, one that stayed in the neighborhood back in the 60s when so many others were leaving. And so to tie that into your question, yeah, I think you're right. There's, for me, a very strong feeling about a need for social justice issues, and I feel that very strongly here in my community, in our country, and that definitely, as you point out, that extends to things in Egypt, where, of course, you know, there's been tremendous undertakings over the last few years with the Arab Spring, and the revolution has centered in Cairo in Tahrir Square. And, you know, kind of tying back to my music, that's one of the reasons why some of the music on this album is there's a composition called Blues for Tahrir, because this is, these are things that I'm following very closely, very passionately, because I still have family there, and that's my, I'm half Egyptian, and these are my people, you know. So this is all tied in with great concern for me.
And bless your heart, you have done your community work. You feel so deeply about it for a number of years now. And I would imagine that when you get to know some of these souls who need someone to give them a helping hand, to give them a leg up, to go forward, and especially I love the fact that you have worked and try to encourage and support and physically help women through the years. When you get to know these people on a one-to-one basis, whenever you get to know someone, anyone in need, it begins to show you a mirror of how important it is to know your respective roots.
Certainly to know your roots, certainly to I like what you said about getting to know people on an individual basis, because kind of going back to the things that are concerns of mine, the ongoing racism and social issues in our country, I look at a neighborhood like ours in West Baltimore where we are the kind of community that is chronically on the news for the negative kind of things that happen in our neighborhood. We face some extreme poverty in our neighborhood, challenges with our education system, with the drug abuse issues in our neighborhood, violence is that tie into that. And those are realities of things that we are fighting in our neighborhood. But what people don't understand, if they're not building those individual relationships, is that the news coverage loves to harp on all those negatives.
Yes.
But when you're here in a neighborhood like ours, when you're living in community, or when you're – we have people that come and volunteer with us and get to know people here in our neighborhood and have the opportunity to realize that though our neighborhood is facing these challenges related to poverty, you still have lots of good people here, and people are people. And once you start getting past all those stereotypes that have people afraid to ever set foot into a neighborhood like ours, you have the chance to start seeing that in person. And it's those one-on-one relationships that are important for us that are community members here. It's those neighbors, those relationships with our neighbors, those that we're working in partnership with, those that we're serving. And that's what's so, I think, significant about our community here is the way we're going about those things, and it's very important. And I really appreciate that you picking up on that and pulling it out, because I think that is a huge part of what more people need to be realizing and thinking about as we just build relationships with each other in our community and our society.
Well, Todd, honestly, it makes your music that much more meaningful. And you have actually said that this is a passion of yours. It's something that you're committed to doing. But it's also the jet fuel that makes your music pop at people, so that it's not just an experiment in, oh, I think I'll delve into my background more, or I want to show off my skills when I play this bass clarinet. The soul that you bring into the music, because you are hands-on every day in the community, makes your music definitely stand out as opposed to people who are merely artists. Not to take that away from them. Everybody has a gift. But you bring a different kind of soul to each song that you do. And this is why you're getting critical praise. I mean, from jump, when this CD first came out not that long ago, even some of the jaded critics were going, oh, God. it's a different kind of music.
Well, I tell you, that's really encouraging for me to hear. So I thank you for those really nice compliments. I mean, that's really encouraging to hear. It really is.
Well, this is just the beginning for you. I mean, I can't even imagine. You've got a gig that's coming up, and I know that you want to talk about that, and we will momentarily, but it's how can we help? How can anyone help your endeavors? Tell us what your organization is and how anyone listening can help you.
Well, and I want to say, too, to your previous compliment, you know, I think one of the things that why it's so exciting to hear that is because I really feel that for us as musicians, well, I think arts in general, I could say just music, but I think that the role of art when you get to a little more of a philosophical level is to be a healing source, this force of positive to uplift the human spirit. And certainly we look at all the terrible things that mankind does to each other with fighting and wars and just terrible things that we are prone to do. And you see how art has that opportunity when you have those special moments when the artists and the audience are connected together, in my case in music, to have this kind of collective moment where things just kind of transcend and you feel inspired. And I'm not trying to take your compliment and assume that I do that all the time, but that's the goal, and maybe that's why in many cultures musicians are almost spiritual role for people too, because there is that capacity. And so I appreciate you sharing that, because that to me is a compliment that I'm having occasions where I'm really succeeding on that level, which is, I think, very important, very important. But go ahead.
You know what? It basically translates into you have an extra measure of love that you put into this music. There is not one iota of a note that is poured into each of these songs on Inheritance where you're not thinking of other people. It's... I'm ending the show with a particular song because it's pivotal, and it's almost a miracle. I read about a reaction to a song that you did, and it never happens in an artist's journey what happened to you when you were playing a particular piece one day. But I'm rushing ahead. Go ahead, finish your thought.
Oh, so you were asking about ways to support the stuff that I'm doing here, and I tell you, there's two ways. Certainly, as far as the on the music front, people that are listeners, come on out and support the live music that I'm doing. It you can see at toddmarcusjazz.com, my calendar for people to come out to see live performances, and of course, love people to pick up the CD, and all that information is there on the website. Now, for folks that may want to be engaged and supporting of the community work that I'm doing here, I can share that our organization is a nonprofit. It's called Newborn Holistic Ministries. And as I shared, we're on the west side of Baltimore. And if you want to see that on the web, you can go to newbornholisticministries.com. And there's some great information there about the different programs that we offer. One is a recovery program for our women overcoming drug addiction and homelessness. And we have both a six-month transitional phase of the program and a long-term one, so that ladies that are coming out of detoxification clinics and sometimes even out of the prison system have the opportunity to have real, meaningful, long-term transition. And for a neighborhood like ours, where we're fighting such extreme addiction still, this is very important.
Yes.
And that's a responsive approach to the challenge in our neighborhood. Now, on the other side, on the preventative side, we have another program that's called Jubilee Arts. And that offers arts classes in visual arts, in dance, in writing, in ceramics, to all ages in our community to restore the once proud legacy we had of the arts and entertainment here on Pennsylvania Avenue, and to engage our people in those kind of positive things, to give them those means of self-expression. So that's our other main program. And for folks that would like to be supportive of us with volunteering, with donations, go to that website, newbornholisticministries.com, and you can get all of our information there. And I'll add, too, that the other third leg of what's been significant about our work is that when we started at our location, we had an intersection which was a major open-air drug market.
Mm.
All four corners of the intersection were abandoned buildings and vacant lots. And we started with just one building, and that was what we would renovate ourselves and make into one of our Martha's Place buildings. And then we continued from there. And that was 2000 when we finished that first one, but we continued and we acquired the vacant lots next to it, made it into a beautiful green space with ponds and trees and flowers, murals, continued across the street renovating those buildings for more Martha's Place housing, more vacant lots turned into green spaces, then the building that became our Jubilee Arts program. So all that to say that in addition to the programs that we've been able to offer our community, it's been this pretty significant physical revitalization as well. So an outward manifestation of the inward programs that we're offering. And again, for folks that are feeling the frustration and the fatigue of all the negatives that we see, whether you're just seeing the stuff in the news at night, this is a chance to see that you don't want to give up on people, on communities.
That's right.
Because if we put that work in, and I will admit it is very hard, but if we put that work in, we can make these kind of transformations.
Oh, absolutely. And I love Newborn Holistic Ministries. I love that name, and I love Martha's Place. How did it get to be Martha's Place? I love that.
Well, it's twofold. The founder, who we talked about, Elder Harris, his mother's name was Martha,
mm-hmm.
but also it comes from Mary and Martha in the Bible.
Oh, yes.
And in one story, they're preparing for Jesus who's coming, and they're going to be having a feast, and Mary runs out to meet him, and Martha voices her frustration that Mary's not helping with the preparations, and Jesus tells her, you know, she's doing all right. Her focus is on the right thing. And the relevance and that name for Martha's Place as a recovery program is that for our ladies that have been in active addiction and homelessness for many cases, 20, 30 years, this is a time of them coming into their new life of recovery and refocusing on to where their attention and energy should be onto the right thing. And so that's the other relevance of the name of Martha's Place.
That is beautiful. I love that. Woo! Very nice. I'm going to certainly, we're going to talk about where you're going to be.
Yeah.
I want to play another track because I want to fit two more tracks in before our time is over.
Sure.
And I'm going to focus on one of the Herod tracks.
Great.
Yeah, this is Herod Part 1 from Inheritance, and tell us a little bit about that, Todd.
Well, it's a composition that takes its name from King Herod in the Bible, and it was an early composition of mine, one of my first, actually, and it has kind of a searching, thundering kind of quality that sort of symbolized King Herod looking for the baby that has just been born that he's heard about, and he's trying to seek him out. And then the composition kind of moves on to a second phase where it's a little more of a safer sort of feel as the tempo comes in, as a little bit of a groove starts happening. It sort of suggests Mary, Joseph, and Jesus feeling this relief as they've escaped that reach. And so it's a composition, like I said, it's one of my earliest ones, but one that I've enjoyed still playing, and on the record was able to feature a second horn player whose name is Don Byron, a tremendous clarinetist that has been an inspiration to me, given a voice to clarinet in modern jazz, and so that's what you hear in this composition, Herod.
Oh, it's you and Don together are just breathtaking. This is Todd Marcus on Hybrid Jazz, and this is Herod Part 1 from Inheritance.
Thank you.
crazy. Crazy. You had the Erics working really hard on that, Todd.
Yeah. It was a situation where they, as you heard, it's a very free kind of section, and something like that really allows for a lot of room very creatively by the rhythm section. And so they've given all that beautiful coloring in there.
Oh, beautiful.
On the drums and on the bass, and create that special mood.
Eric Kennedy on drums, Eric Wheeler on bass, Xavier Davis on piano, Don Byron on clarinet, and
That's
Todd
right.
Marcus on bass clarinet. My God, it was like a ballet, really.
Nice.
Yeah. Just not the kind of music that you hear every day, which is what makes this so delicious. And it's just so incredible that this internationally recognized work. I mean, you're used to getting the international recognition, but you know, to have you Baltimore based, hon, it's just fabulous. Oh my gosh!
And it's nice for folks to realize that while there's long been the focus on New York as the center for this music, that folks remember that you've got a lot of talented people that certainly here in Baltimore, but all throughout the country, different major cities. And so I'm happy that we're able to represent here on behalf of Baltimore.
Well, gosh knows that I just saw that you had done an event. Am I correct? In the past couple of weeks, there was an event for Martha's Place?
Well, we have an event, a fundraiser event. Oh, let me take it back. We had a graduation last night, one of the ladies that completed the program, so that was a special
great.
Event. And then we've got one of our annual fundraisers coming up on April 29th. It's a golf tournament, so that's something that's in the works for a way for people to support the program, keep the doors open and the program up and running.
That's awesome. So you have a link to that I can share on my Facebook page too?
Oh, sure do. If people just go to marthasplace.org, they can go directly to that. But again, if they go to the Newborn Holistic Ministries website, they're going to see that as well.
Okay, great. So now, your event, you are going to be where, and you are going to be with whom?
That event is going to be tomorrow night here
tomorrow.
In Baltimore, Maryland. And it's going to be a performance with myself, with the great pianist George Colligan, who is on the album. And I think you mentioned that there's two different quartets that I present on the album. And so
yes.
He, Eric Wheeler, and Warren Wolf are one of the quartets on the album. And so we've done a bunch of different dates as far as performances in Baltimore, D.C., Philadelphia, New York. And so tomorrow night will be our next one in Baltimore at Andy Musique. And so for folks that aren't familiar, that's on North Charles Street between Mulberry and Franklin Street. It's a great listening room.
Yes,
folks
it is.
Have been there. It's almost more of a concert style and a beautiful piano. And so we'll just be having a good time playing music there from the CD. George Colligan's be bringing a lot of his music in as well. So every time
great.
I play with these guys, it's a beautiful energy, and so it's going to be a lot of fun tomorrow night.
And it's so cool that Warren is still accessible.
Yeah, well, that's an example of what you were saying, a world-class musician who is all over the place. Where he's down in Savannah, Georgia right now. When I talked to him the other day, he was in... Oh, I can't remember. A couple of weeks ago, he was over in Qatar, in the country,
mm-hmm.
You know, in the Middle East, and both with his own projects as a leader, as well as his work with Christian McBride's band. He's, you know, again, he's talking about less common instruments. On the vibraphone, he's one of the top voices in the world on that instrument.
Yes.
And, I mean, he plays drums with me in my quartet, but... he's multi-talented, the drums, the vibes, the vibraphone. He's even getting into the bass these days. So just a tremendously talented individual.
And George, I mean, you really do have artists around you that are known far and wide. So I would imagine, since this is a smaller room, and as my friends from Verano say, it very much reminds them of a European listening room. You've got essentially a row house, and you go up steps to get to the where behind the curtain you are able to see folks play. There is not a bad seat in that house. So if you're going to go, if you live in the area, make sure that you get to go. There's a way to get tickets in advance, correct?
Sure. They can go to toddmarcusjazz.com.
Okay.
And there, all the details are there, as well as a link directly to the event website where they can purchase tickets in advance. And it's one of those things where, like you said, it's a small room, so it's definitely recommended that people go ahead and buy tickets in advance online.
Yeah, I would definitely do that in this case, because the word gets out. And actually, speaking of that, Todd, the word doesn't get out as much. There's got to be a way for us collectively, those of us who love jazz in the area, we've got to figure out a way where we can know what's going on. In the city paper is one thing, that's for sure. There's just a few blurbs about who's coming up where when you get the Friday Baltimore Sun.
Mm-hmm.
But there's got to be a way for us to pool our resources so that we know who is playing where. I just saw Thelgen Allen post a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know that somebody was coming into town, and he said, "Doggone it, if I had known, I would have brought a bunch of folks with me."
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you, there is some good news on that front, because there's an organization called the Baltimore Jazz Alliance that has a free online calendar. So folks go to baltimorejazz.com. They're able to pull up that calendar, and it includes a bunch of the performances that are going on. And it's one of these, it's an interesting approach, because it is set up so that musicians and artists and venues post all of their performances, and then it's put out in a good, easy-to-follow calendar. So I would encourage folks to use that. I would encourage folks not just to go there to look at stuff, to see what's happening, but to post their events, because musicians, you know, we're in a day and age where, like you said, Trish, the papers don't have that same role that they once did. I mean, papers are struggling on their own right. I'm a Baltimore Sun subscriber, and it's more the Baltimore pamphlet these days. It's really thin. So they've lost their staff. They've lost their capacity to do more coverage on these things. And so it's put the responsibility even more so on us as the artists to get the word out. And so I'll say that to all my colleagues and musicians, and to the venues too. Take advantage of this Baltimore Jazz website, because it's a free way to post the information, and it helps us to keep the listening public up to date on what's going on.
That's great. That's great. And, you know, I don't know if you were aware of this or not, but today has been a really wonderful show, because we started out with Kendrick Scott.
Yeah.
And Kendrick,
you're having a good time today.
Oh my God, yes! Are you kidding? Look, so much of a good time that I forgot to actually program songs into the schedule. But that's okay. We'll make up for it next time. That way, we were able to do your beautiful 9-minute track, Solstice, that we heard earlier.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yes. So here's what I'm going to do. I want to be able, since there's only about 20 minutes more to the show,
mm-hmm.
I want you to tell this story. I want to play another track from Inheritance. This track is a song that you wrote, and your aunt heard this song, and she had a reaction.
Oh, okay.
Wasuli.
Yes, Wasuli, which is Arabic for my arrival. And as I shared, I've really been working to merge this Middle Eastern influences with my jazz. And it's tricky, because the two musics are composed, they're constructed very differently. If you think about a lot of Middle Eastern music, oftentimes it's a lot of unison playing or kind of like with the composition we were just listening to of Herod a moment ago. Mm. It has these kind of drones, these just this held note at the bottom, and then some melodies on top. And those are kind of the trademarks of some of the Middle Eastern sounds. And what I found was that when you insert Western harmony and a lot of the harmony that's very thick and lush that we like in jazz, it almost takes away some of those qualities. So it's been a pretty difficult process to find a way to make both of those work together.
And a so daunting with this tune, task.
Yeah, definitely.
Daunting task, yeah.
Yeah. And so that's why it's been a bit of a journey. But with this tune, Wasula, I felt like it was a first composition where it really had come together. So I called it my arrival. And I was playing it for my aunt and uncle who were visiting a couple of years ago from Cairo. And this tune had, and a lot of my Middle Eastern influence stuff has been influenced by a classic Egyptian vocalist named Abdul Halim Hafez. And he's his vocalist, and they do these epic kind of super long compositions, and some of them have had real strong influences on me, and he's very popular in Egypt. And so there was a couple phrases of his that I had kind of put little snippets of into this composition. And so I was playing it for my aunt and uncle, and then she started singing along because she knew that reference. And to me, it was very rewarding that again, here, this was this composition that I felt was my arrival and finally getting it to work and having my Egyptian aunt to pick up on that. It felt like a validation that I really had arrived with that effort and that approach.
That is a miracle. That's such a beautiful moment. Oh, my gosh. You know, you think about these things from time to time. If it really is true that at the end of your life flashes before you, and there are these moments that are just etched in your memory, all of that comes back at you. That's going to be one of those moments that you remember.
There would be, yeah.
Yeah,
you're right.
Whew, that's beautiful. Todd Marcus is with us, and we want to play this song so much because promptly at 4 o'clock this show will go off because this is the third and final hour of the show. I wanted you to hear Wasuli, correct? Wasuli.
Yeah, you got it.
Yep, Inheritance is the name of the CD on Hybrid Jazz. You're going to love this.
Thank you.
Oh, my gosh, that's just so brilliant, Todd. Oh, my gracious. I'm trying to get your microphone on here. There you go.
No, thank you very much. It's a fun, I love playing that one. It's got it's got a lot of different multiple themes going on, and then just, again, it's the kind of hypnotic quality, I think, to the composition that makes it a lot of fun to play on, and I always have fun having Eric Kennedy to take those drum solos
God.
Drum solo on it. It's just a lot of fun, a lot of great energy and a lot of fun.
And this is, you know, just a little bit, you said this, but in actuality, all of these songs are pieces that tell stories. You can almost see a beginning, middle, and end for each of these. I mean, even when you do Bye Bye Blackbird, which is so cool to hear on the album, and then you're doing a Monk song. So all of these have been a part of your thought process to put on this wonderful project. What would you like to see happen with this? Is there a particular modus operandi of yours to think, okay, if I do a work like this, I wonder if it will, and you fill in the dots.
Well,
did you have something in mind?
I definitely did, and that was and it comes back so nicely to where we started, which is that I wanted to get my work and my playing, my compositions out there to broader audience, and to create more opportunities for me to continue doing what I'm doing. To a large degree, I've been focused in Baltimore and D.C., but I'm really hoping that this creates more awareness and opportunities both nationally and internationally to have those chances to be spending a little more time out on the road, going out and playing for different audiences and connecting with people with the music. So that's my big hope from this project.
Well, Todd, I truly can see you becoming part of this. Oh, I'm just going to speak it out to the universe. Peace process with your music.
That would be nice, and to that healing quality we were talking about that music has. I tell you, I've seen this photo that a colleague of mine has when he played in Egypt. And they played in the shadows of the pyramids. And I always thought, well, that would be a fun kind of opportunity. And I had a chance. We did one of our CD release performances in a museum in Pennsylvania that has a massive Egyptian exhibit. And so we looking at the photos that came from that and being in the midst of that, it was just very special, very meaningful. And my father, who's a historian, and as we talked about, is Egyptian, he spoke a few words, so it was very meaningful. But I think to build on that, to be able to have a chance to do a concert in Egypt one day would be very special. As I shared, I have a suite of music that has been written called Blues for Tahrir, which is focused on the Tahrir Square in Cairo, where a lot of the Arab Spring has been taking place. So,
yeah.
Well, if that worked out one day to do something there, that would be, you know, it'd be a very special, meaningful experience.
Well, honestly, I think that anybody who's listening right now in time for tomorrow, we need to make sure that certain ambassadors who are based in Washington take a little trip from Washington to Baltimore to see you tomorrow night.
Yeah, that would be beautiful. That would be nice.
Wouldn't it? Because I just see you being able to be straddling two different worlds. And when you do that, when you do it with the kind of personality that you have and the music that you have to share, there's no telling what can be done in the name of unity.
Well put, Trish, well put.
Well, I mean it, because you're your own ambassador. And there are some smart ears that are listening right now, the opportunity to have you over in Egypt or someplace, and you don't have any qualms about that at all. Do you want to travel to different places? You do.
Oh, yeah, that's still a passion. I mean, I've done some international performances in the past, but certainly looking to increase that more. So that's very much a passion still, to build on that so you can grow.
And what will happen to your community endeavors? You've got somebody to run them while you go away for a while?
Well, I do have a good staff in place, and there's a lot of tasks that I feel I'm good at delegating things when I'm away for a little while. So it wouldn't be to the detriment of the community work that we fought so hard for here in our community. That would not suffer.
Yeah, I'm sure, because you've done this for quite a while now, over 10 years.
Yeah, balancing the two lives. I mean, these are two full-time endeavors for me,
yes.
And it's been the norm of doing them both at the same time. So it's the only thing I know, really, at this point.
Well, bless your heart for everything. And you know what? Can folks find, through Todd Marcus Jazz, your other passion? Can they find out about or two separate websites?
They can. If they go to Todd Marcus Jazz, of course, they can get all my music information. But if they go there and read my bio, I tell you, at one point years ago, I kind of didn't share those two worlds with each other because I didn't want folks to think in either one of those respective worlds that I was just kind of a halfway at either one of them. But as the years have come along and I've felt more comfortable with my accomplishments in both, I really tried to spread the word on both. And so if folks go to my website there at toddmarcusjazz.com and pull up the bio, you're going to see a little bit that talks about my community work and have a link to the website there to make sure people can see that other half of my life is going on.
Well, it's wonderful to have one synchronicity with the other, because when people start to realize what you have done for women and children, especially in the community, it makes you become such a dear figure for them. People will want to support you, and I thank you for everybody that you've helped, and I know that you get those kinds of accolades all the time, but you, to me, you're a musical genius, and then on top of that, you are a very special human being, so thank you.
Thank you very much, Trish. I really appreciate that.
You are so welcome. I'm glad that you had an hour to spend. Bless your
yeah.
heart!
Yeah, we got to dig into some stuff today, didn't we?
Didn't we? I love it. And I like the way you pronounce the venue. Pronounce the venue again for me tomorrow night. Only you can do it right.
Andy Musik.
That's
I think
it.
It's German, a German title. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
whatever it is, it sounds cool when it comes from you.
Nice.
Todd, again, thank you, and we'll see you, if not tomorrow, because there's a couple of things. I want to be able to see you tomorrow. Do your thing, so don't be surprised to see me.
Many thanks, Trish, and to you for spreading the gospel that you have over these recent years about the music and supporting the artists. Grateful for what you've been doing.
Thank you very, very much. And blessings to you always. We'll see you very soon.
Thank you, Trish. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. Todd Marcus, and thank you so much. We will see you on Tuesday. Happy Easter, happy Holy Thursday, and Good Friday to you. Thanks so much for all of your support and for everybody in the chat room today.